Speaking of reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Tranquilberg. Hey, Kirk. Happy New Year. We're recording a few days after the start of the year.
Yeah.
So this will come out, you know, closer to Valentine's Day here in the States, but, you know, who knows? Over the last month or so, most like late November into through December, yes. I got four or five people contacted me saying, hey, I'm looking for work, or how do I get hired? You know, looking for this kind of job, you know, this, that kind of stuff, any ideas or leads or stuff like that. And it's not uncommon that I get requests like that. And I'm sure you get some of that too, Kirk. But mostly also, if
I'm hiring.
Yeah. But I also, you know, sometimes I hear from companies saying, hey, we're looking for a particular person, you know, or somebody with these skills or whatever, and they're looking for candidates.
Yes.
And over the decades that I've been involved with one thing or another in the reliability sphere, it's ebbed and flowed. You know, sometimes it's nothing but people looking for work, or the opposite is nothing but companies looking to hire. And right now it's over the last 6 months, more so than it's switched to there's people looking for work. There's not companies looking to hire. And so it's unfortunate when somebody reaches out to me saying, you know, of any openings or this, that, or stuff. I said, you know, I haven't heard of any openings in a good 6 months, I'd say, that I could say, yeah, that will fit what you're looking for. So I put their name in a folder on my desktop and say, you know, if I hear something, I'll scan that and then I'll let you know if that looks like a match to you. But the bigger picture is, how do you get hired today? You know, there's so many variations that have changed from when you and I were looking for a job some 30 years ago.
Well, right. But there's so many tools now. I mean, definitely, you know, I'd use Grammarly to help me write a resume. I might. We talked about AI. I would even use that. I just look at it and then I'd say, well, that looks better than what I said.
Well, yeah, but I didn't go to UCLA. So let me take that out.
But, you know, again, I think subscribe to the LinkedIn job thing just to see what's out there. And also when they advertise reliability engineer, and the biggest problem is they all put up senior reliability engineer and they miss one major critical word, and that's site. And I just get so, it's just so irritating to see that they say senior reliability engineer. And then you go to the site and it says senior site reliability engineer, which we have never, we've asked people and there's nobody that's come forward to talk about site reliability engineering, which is a big part of reliability. And certainly I see lots and lots of postings for that particular position, I guess, data farms and, you know, servers and all that.
Well, but it's most any decent website that has to work, you know, like Amazon and Google, they have hordes of these people that just make sure that their site works.
But I see tons of ads, you know, and I look through them sometimes. For here in this area, it's mostly defense industry, which I have no interest in, and maybe some people do. But that's where the money is, and that's where a lot of, you know, government contracts and things are still certainly, you know, they still have the money. I think one of the challenges is that companies want this, you know, specific set of, I know this particular programming language or this, you know, this app or whatever. And instead of saying, you know, the people skills and their abilities to learn, and, you know, they have a general background in engineering. I'm not saying hire a non-engineer for an engineering job, but if they've, you know, been around like you and I in many different capacities of seeing all, especially reliability engineering, mostly see a lot of the processes in companies. I mean, they have to be involved in manufacturing. They usually have to be involved in design.
Supply chain.
What's that?
Supply chain.
Supply chain, right. Too. Exactly. They have to go out and deal with the suppliers of subsystems and things like that. And so you learn a lot, general knowledge about manufacturing in general. And, you know, learning the specifics of any company and learning their processes is going to take time anyway, and you're going to have to adapt to it. So I think it's a lot of, I want this person to know all these things about our company and what we're doing exactly, and I don't have to spend more than 2 hours training them or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't gone to an interview lately, so I don't know. But I think there's some of that. There's this effort to avoid onboarding and training,
right,
and bringing people up to speed and stuff. I don't know if it's true or not, but when I got hired, it was, all right, you got a week. We need you to go talk to these 15 people, you know, to set up. They're expecting you to get on their calendar, go figure out what they do, what advice they can give you as you're getting started, stuff like that. And some of these people you're going to work with on a regular basis, some of these people would be good to know how things get done here. Is learning the ropes is what they
right,
call it.
Right. But then for a reliability engineer, they might, you know, if they were asking me to come in, first of all, they wouldn't, because I have enough out there information. They know where I stand. But, you know, do you know FMEA? Do you know Weibull analysis? Do you know MTBF calculation? And, you know, I'm going, yeah, I know about these things. I know a lot about them. I know that I don't want to use them, and I have very little use for them most of the time, and only on specific problems.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of established.
There's a bunch of that stuff, but it's beyond getting to the interview is one step in the process.
Yeah. Right. Right.
It's even better if you're looking for a change in employment or a step up or a step into reliability or, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do. And this is with people that reach out to us and say, hey, you know, any openings? I think that is part of the problem. Is you don't look for a job when you need to look for a job. It's you need to be networking, helping other people, building not just your resume, right? I was manager of this for 2 years or whatever.
Right.
Part of that is, you know, showing improvement and getting promoted and stuff like that. That's all good. More importantly, it's creating this network of people that know you well enough to know what you're good at, because you're good at what you do. It doesn't matter what position it is. You could be a technician or engineer or a product developer or an electrical engineer, maintenance tech, maintenance manager, whatever. Do it well. Help other people succeed. To me, that's the key to getting hired later, is now you have a repository of people that are references for you and could say, hey, I know about this job over here. I know you, this would be a good fit. That's how people get hired, is people come to you and say, Kurt, you're the perfect fit for this position we got. Can you start tomorrow? As opposed to you knocking on 100 doors virtually nowadays by going to their websites or sending in job board notices or stuff like that, and hoping one of them clicks. Is if people are looking for you because they know you do a good job and we want to work with you, that helps you get hired way easier.
That has to be somewhere publicly known. I mean, you have to either participate in conferences or get around and network with other people outside of your company.
Well, even inside your company today,
inside your company can do it too.
People are moving and shaking. I mean, people are leaving companies left and right and going to other companies.
Oh, sure.
So much this year.
Sure.
But if I I got an offer from somebody years ago, and I knew them because I worked with them for 4 years very closely. And they moved to another company and said, hey, we need you here. And they were they were just offering the job to me. And it was only because of the reputation that you build working with other people. And I agree, the wider that net is, the broader you can go, the better. But any position you're in now, always be looking for the next job. And by that, I mean doing your job that you're doing now really well, help other people succeed in their job, be so helpful that you help other people get promoted, you know, get do what they need to be doing, help them do their job really well. That's what I mean by networking. It's not enough to have your business card on. Do people even use business cards anyway?
I don't think so.
No. I don't think so. You know, it's not having a friend on Facebook or a connection on LinkedIn. It's, can I help you be successful? That cements with them that you're actually useful. You're a good person. You're going to help me be successful. You're going to help this company be successful. You do your job exceedingly well. I think that's the number one thing to do all the time. And then when it's time that you want to change jobs, more than likely it'll just come to you because of that behavior.
Well, maybe so. I it was the way I got into Dell. I mean, one of the managers had seen me. We'd been to conferences together and he'd seen my papers or knew of my work in the past, but not, I hadn't been in his company and we never worked together, but he knew the work in highly accelerated limit testing, HALT, and HASS, and working with Greg Hobbs. And so he asked me to come, you know, join them. He really asked me to move me from Colorado down to Austin and come help them work on, you know, doing this to their computers. And so I did. But, you know, as far as, and it lasted 7 years. And I went over, and of course, the main job was to train the Foxconns and the MSI and all those
all the other
companies
how
to do my
work.
Job. Yeah. So that I wouldn't have a job. And that became true after a while. And
well, you were successful. Fact,
well, yeah, well, yeah, okay, you know, okay, yeah, I worked myself out of a job. I was so good at training the other engineers in China that they didn't need me.
They still need you, Kirk, the last round I've had. But the idea is that that's the easiest way to get a job is not cold calling. That's really difficult. It can happen. You can land the right spot and get find your dream job that way. Yeah. it is a hard way to go about it these days. The other part here, Kirk, and this one I think is part of what your network, you know, your reputation included, is that you were technically very good at what you did. You knew about focusing on failure mechanisms, right? You knew, you had story after story about how you solve problems by doing, paying attention to failures.
Right. Technically competent. They know that you've either talked about the subject or
demonstrated that you know.
Demonstrate, right. Either through your writing or your discussions with the individuals or conferences. I mean, you know, you're either
presenting your work.
Yeah. And I would all the time at Greg Hobbs seminars, he would invite me to come and give some real world examples from Stories Tech and other things that we had found. And did that even with Dell, especially when I went over to train them. And even before that with Huawei, which I was hired as an independent consultant before I worked for Dell, to come over and teach HALT and HASS and these new techniques. And I, you know, always wonder how much they got out of it.
Because they don't ask questions. Right?
Yeah, they don't ask questions because, you know, I just, anyway, I didn't have a translator necessarily. I think they understood more English than they spoke. So it was okay. But, you know, that reputation was what I had before. And Dell had, the individual manager at Dell knew about that and knew about my work and knew about the work with the Accelerated Stress Testing and Reliability Committee, which was a CPMT, Components Packaging Manufacturing Technology, IEEE society, which I don't think exists anymore. I think they've changed it to something else.
Yeah, probably but AI.
But that, you know, for years I'd worked in that. And we organize every year. So those. Yeah,
But it, for somebody that, you know, saying, hey, I want to be a reliability engineer, or I just got laid off, I'm looking for work, this doesn't help a whole lot, right? It's that story of plant a tree, you know, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago.
Right, right. And you're right about today. You're right about the fact that you need to be keeping your head above, you know, eyes out for the horizon, because I think it's not my father's time when people took jobs and they were, unless they were, had done something terrible, they usually stayed with the company and usually had a lifetime employment. And yeah, that's certainly gone decades ago.
In a lifetime pension after that.
A lifetime pension, right. So save your money. But, you know, it's also, I think, educational to change jobs. I mean, you learn a new field. I look at these people that have been in the same company. They could do different jobs in that company, but they're still working with the same product. Okay. And I've worked with defibrillators. You've worked with, you know, all kinds of products. You mm-hmm. learn all kinds of new things about the things that you own or work with. And, you know,
well, I think that's going to be unavoidable. And some people come to me and say, hey, I've been working in this field and I want to stay in that field. And I'm like, but you're a reliability engineer. You could work in the medical field instead. Or I don't know anything about medical field. All right. Capacitors fail. Do you know about that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, valves, you know, seize. You know about right. that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. They use capacitors and valves.
Right. You take a circuit board out of a defibrillator and it looks like a circuit board out of anything else.
You know,
you don't know. It's got solder and ICs and resistors and components.
Just different set of constraints, and that's easy to learn.
Exactly.
And so part of it is broaden your look. One of the benefits in the reliability world is that just about, I don't know of any industry that doesn't have some aspect to reliability. We were talking off camera before before we started about site reliability engineering.
Right.
You know, even websites have reliability engineers, you know, so in databases and stuff like that. And I don't know how transferable or my hardware reliability skills are to site reliability.
Well, I'm sure that has sometimes has to do with hardware reliability.
But it's always software's fault.
Software.
Yeah. You know, it's always software's fault. And so just get that straight. You know, it's always their fault. But the idea is that the, our skills are very transferable. You can be in a polymer industry and then move to a metals industry, move to a, you know, consumer product industry, you know, automotive. It's same.
Now, does a hiring company understand that? Because so many of them want very specific things instead of, oh, you've never done that. But
you never used demonstrated proprietary software that we only show.
Yeah, exactly.
People.
Exactly.
Well,
you
no,
know,
of course not.
Yeah. Let me see it and give me 10 minutes, you know, give me a couple hours and I can figure out something about it. But usually, especially, you know, as we get older, we know the right questions to ask about how to try and figure these systems out and figure out something new and who to talk to and go down to the manufacturing line and look at what they're doing. Well, there's a lot of things when I went into Dell, I basically was trying to listen and understand, first seek understanding about what was going on before I opened my mouth and, you know, started
causing problems.
Yeah. Being a pain in the ass to
getting things done, in other words.
Right.
I think that's the third piece, and that might make a good third element of this, is be curious, be willing to learn. It's even in the interviews and stuff, it's like, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I've never seen that software, but and I've learned these four other packages and it didn't take very long and I'm quite sure it's similar. So I could learn that one too, you know?
Right. And hey, if you're a coder, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in peace.
You've got to be also aware of disappearing functions. You know, there's a lot of jobs that obviously will. I mean, I'd even worry about truck driving and things like that. It's, you know, taxi driver. Well, that may be around for a while. I think Uber will be and Lyft, but I think that those will be converted into all self-driving automobiles at some point. So, you know, don't buy a taxi medallion at in New York City.
Yeah. Aren't those like $100,000?
Oh, like unbelievable price. Yeah. And you know, they basically, just like anything that's no longer, you know, the technology makes a shift, and it's not a necessary human function anymore. And I think humanoid robots are going to do a lot of that too. And I look at my daughter's new degree and becoming a nurse. Mm-hmm. I know that there's going to be some point, you know, but as a human, I really do want a human nurse. I do really hope that doesn't become a little humanoid robot, you know.
Right, out of Star Trek or something, Star Wars.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, we're all, I do want them to do my wash. Transfer the clothes and also be able to put the dishes in the dishwasher. That would be great. Or hand wash them. So
I'm thinking to write my poetry for me, because I'm really bad at that. And apparently AI stuff's better.
You haven't tried ChatGPT for that.
I'm bad enough. I don't even know how to prompt it.
I've gotten some very good and I've even read them at my sister-in-law's memorial, but I modify them. I take it as a baseline, you know, just like you would a base cheese formula.
Make
it your own, add a little different, you know, bacteria, whatever you do to make them different. Yeah. And it comes up with something unique. But
never to be repeated. Never be my repeated.
Yeah, I want to make that cheese again.
Right. So part of it, to sum it up, and I think there might be one other element to getting hired, but it's
being a nice person.
being helpful, useful, good person.
That's, right.
You know, and technically competent. It'd be no, you know, if somebody asks you about why, well, either you know it or you don't. Don't, you know, BS that. You either know it or you don't. And right. If somebody that does know about Hull testing, and you ask somebody, tell me about Hull, highly accelerated life testing, and they don't know what they're talking about, you'll know in 3 seconds. So either you know it or you don't. And
right. I say, can you pass Hull?
Yeah, there's, yeah. And if they haven't listened to our very first episode of the show, they haven't been studied.
Yes, you can pass Hull. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all the time. I always pass Hull. Never fail.
Yeah. So,
And then the third is be curious, be willing to learn. And that counts in your current job or wherever you're doing it now. I think one last piece, Kirk, that I would add to the tick list of things to do to get hired is, don't hold yourself back. There's my daughter was here over the Christmas, and she's still working on her PhD. She expects to graduate or matriculate or whatever they call it. In this coming year. Yeah. And then she found out that in the field that she wants to work, the pharmaceutical development field of her research scientist types like her and her, is that you really need a postdoc or maybe two postdocs.
She'll be
45 before she's ready to be hired.
Oh my God.
And basically that field is, I said, have you thought about other fields that don't require that? You're chasing something that you may never attain if they keep adding things onto it for what they want.
Get
a job and then work your way up to it.
Exactly. And get a job, and you learn so much more on the job about the realities of the world and the realities,
which is very valuable. And so it's the don't hold yourself back. You don't need a PhD in reliability engineering to be a reliability engineer. You don't need, if you've got good fundamental ability to learn and understand that things fail, and usually for a reason, and you can figure that out, you can solve problems, you can be helpful, you can do all kinds of stuff with that.
All right.
We did that years ago. We talked about how did you become a reliability engineer, and it was, we all had different paths. And I think other than Chris Jackson, who has a PhD in it, none of us, you know, went to school specifically to become a reliability engineer.
But Chris also calls out a lot what was wrong about the things he learned too.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's great.
He also doing that part of, you know, he's in an assignment in the military and included go get a degree. So he did.
Right.
But it was a condition for the job he was moving into is to go get this degree. And he says, you know, yeah, right. A lot of it was useful. Some of it not so much. But don't hold yourself back. If you don't ask, they can't say no. Is one piece of that, but it's also you may be surprised that your reputation and your technical capabilities and your ability to learn can get you a PhD level position.
Right.
It just you need to put the work in to have the equivalent of a PhD level of depth of knowledge to convey that. And part of it is just it's trust yourself. You know, can you do this job? Can you come rise up to meet those challenges? And if you think you can, you probably can. If you think you can't, then you can't.
Well, have confidence in yourself that you're going to try and adapt to this, you know, and be curious, like you said, and ask questions and do stretch your, you know, when you apply for a job, you may apply for something that you don't have all exact skills. Mm-hmm. And they may, you know, do your interviews and what your other knowledge is. You might find that they do need it. Or when they interview you, they might put you in another job that they had open, but they didn't necessarily advertise and said you're a great fit. So, you know, go out and interview, go out and network, and as all those things you mentioned before. But also, don't be afraid to try new industries, because you will have, even though, you know, your skills are transferable and many ours are just investigating what failed and why did it fail. That's the best way to learn about a company's processes. And that's really the fundamentals, you know, the five whys, the 10 whys, the 1,000 whys of why it failed. And that's where you gain increase your knowledge base, increase your networks, and, you know, people write a book.
For example, eventually.
But
writing a book is not going to guarantee you get a job.
No, you're right.
It's not going to do it. There's a whole lot more to it. But at the moment, the market is pretty slow. People are, there's enough uncertainty, at least in the U.S. market, and I think worldwide, that it's slowing down. And it's cyclical. It does that. It moves around. It comes up and down. It always moves. But hopefully there's a couple of tips in there for you if you're thinking about moving positions, or you need to change positions, or you're looking to get into the market or become a reliability engineer. There's all of these things we think will help you in one way or the other. But if you've got a question about it, or, you know, how do I actually do this, or what's working, what's not working in your world, let us know. We're over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Kirk and I are available, as well as the other hosts, through LinkedIn and our about pages. So plenty of ways to get in touch. And you can ask us if we know we have any openings. As of this recording, I don't know if too many at the moment.
Hardly
any or none.
No, I just see lots of job openings, mostly in the defense industry. That's around here in Denver.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Your mileage may vary depending on where you are in the world.
Right.
So anyway, Kirk, we slipped in a few notes on AI there, despite stuff. So anyway.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah. So hopefully it goes. All right.
All right.
Thanks, Kirk.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.